This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 43, Jean-Claude Van Damme in Cyborg.
Cyborg from 1989, starring the muscles from Russell's, Jean-Claude Van Damme, the very taciturn Van Damme.
Yeah.
This is a film that fills me with a lot of sadness because, as you know, Chris, and as our listeners I think know, I'm a huge fan of Canon Films. They put out some of my absolute favorite back-to-the-same movies from the 80s. But they've also, I mean, in addition to some of their crazy stuff like Ninja 3 and Gore, they also put out, you know, like Barfly. We spoke about that in
one of our
previous casts.
Sure.
Yeah. But unfortunately, in the late 80s, they filed for bankruptcy. A lot of bad business decisions, a lot of movies they expected to make money did not. And this was their last movie that Canon Cinemas put out. So this was, Canon Cinemas went out with, Canon Films went out with a whimper, not a bang. And the genesis of this movie is quite unique in the sense that it was originally intended to be, well, not intended to be, but it was sort of repurposed. Canon put out The Master of the Universe, which was a really ridiculous live-action adaptation of He-Man. And Dolph Lundgren played He-Man. And the film was not a box office success, but one thing that Canon would do is they would often like put a sequel into production while they were filming the original in the hopes that the first one would actually do well.
Jeez, those were the days.
Yeah.
No longer.
So they hired a director by the name of Albert Pyun, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. And he's a very unique director. A lot of B-movies. I mean, he started off with Sword and the Sorcerer, and everything else went very straight to video, very downhill, very low budget. Anyway, they hired Albert Pyun to direct Masters of the Universe 2, The Cyborg.
Electric Boogaloo, yeah. That old joke, yeah.
And not only that, but they also had another movie in production, a Spider-Man film. They were going to make a Spider-Man movie, and Pyun was going to direct that as well. But because of the fact that Canon was financially strapped at this point, they couldn't afford the rights anymore to both properties. So they lost the rights to Marvel for Spider-Man. They lost the rights to Masters of the Universe to Mattel. But they had already gone into pre-production, so they had sets built and costume design.
So they had to do something.
So they had to do something
with their properties.
So they asked Pyun if he could do something, and he basically repurposed his script for Masters of the Universe 2 and turned it into Cyborg. Now, this movie does not really, like, when you watch this movie, you don't get any sense of, like, He-Man or Skeletor or Eternia. It's a very dark, bizarre, strange movie. But, very, like I said before, very interesting genesis. The movie was made for $500,000, which is impressive when you look at the movie. I mean, it looks like it was made for more, right?
Yeah, as we talked about Battlefield Earth, which looks like it was made for much less than the $50 million that
exactly,
they commissioned it for.
Exactly.
This looks much better than Battlefield Earth for about, $50.5 million less. It's incredible.
However, I mean, you do $2 million was already spent in pre-production, so that's actually the production cost was $500,000. So we'll say $2.5 million,
okay,
but still.
Yeah.
So, tell us about Cyborg.
You know, your standard post-apocalyptic...
Post-plague, really.
Yeah, wasteland movie where much of humanity has been decimated by this affliction. I guess to save on funds, they don't show you how people react to this affliction.
Yeah.
Their eyeballs don't, you know, bleed as in Ebola, and their limbs don't fall off, and none of that stuff. So they basically, you just know that it's wiped out a large part of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're left with these guys named, I guess they're called slingers. Which to me sounds like isn't that someone who deals drugs? I don't know. Like you're slinging hash or whatever. Yeah. And these guys are sort of mercenaries whose job it is to, I guess, protect people as they get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And on this, you know, against this backdrop is a bunch of roving gangs, as there always is in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Right.
Everyone degenerates into Thomas Hobbesian territory, where life is brutish, nasty, and short.
Yep.
So, so that's what you get here. So, of course, the Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels, he's a slinger. Mm-hmm. So he's a mercenary. He's a ass-kicking guy. And
well, apparently, I mean, there's in Atlanta, or as Atlanta, as Van Damme says, they're working on some sort of cure for this plague.
Yeah, and as we know, Atlanta is the center of the Centers for Disease Control.
There you go.
So, apparently that has not been affected by the affliction. So they're still operating with their hospitals and research centers. Everywhere else, on the other hand, has been pretty much decimated. So you see this post-apocalyptic New York, and then a hilarious bit of...
Which looked nothing like
that. Yeah, it's true. And then also Hoboken, famously across the... I guess it's not the East River, but the other one in New York. Mm-hmm. The Hudson. The Hudson River, yeah. So it's across... and famously the birthplace of both the game of baseball, I believe, and Frank Sinatra. So Hoboken has been decimated as well, and New York has been decimated, and
we can assume the world has been decimated.
I mean, at least the United States.
There you go. But I mean, what I find really funny is, so I mean, in the sort of like during the credits, we have this voiceover, this really sort of like, you know,
ponderous
voice, and we have this
this
man saying, you know, talking about the plague and everything, and then he goes. But and they're developing a cure for this plague. But why? I like the dead. I like the misery. I like this world. This in a very way. I'm like, wow. That's cool, man.
And obviously, I guess gang members are just loving this, Somalia-esque, just government free anarchy, and they can just do what they please. And this gangster who you quoted here, his name is.
Fender Tremolo.
Yeah, I guess we should say at this point that every character in this movie
is
named after a musical instrument or a guitar/drum manufacturer.
There you go. I mean, Van Damme's character is Gibson. Rickenbacker. Yeah,
Rickenbacker, famously played by the Beatles.
Yep, the cyborg we'll talk about in a moment. Yeah. His name, Pearl.
Yeah, Pearl, famous drum manufacturer.
And,
Tommy Lee from Motley Crue plays Pearl drums, among many others.
And there's even another character named Marshall Stratt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody... So, I mean,
there's no Yamaha campfire acoustic guitar. But, yeah, there's everything else.
So, there. I mean, we normally save, what do we learn till the end? But, I mean, one thing I did learn is that in the post-apocalyptic world, everybody's named after a musical instrument. I mean,
despite not having much of in the way of electricity.
Or music.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any wandering minstrels in this world. So,
maybe they play the spoons. I don't know.
Maybe.
So there's this gang, and we've got a cyborg. The titular cyborg is actually not the muscles from Brussels.
No, and I assume that
I assumed as well. I hadn't seen this movie in, a decade and a half. And I figured, a cyborg, the wooden, terrible acting of Jean-Claude would be perfect for that role.
Quite well to a cyborg,
But it's not. It's actually a woman who, I guess, has the
knowledge
to get to Atlanta and help...
The people find the cure or something. Very, very, very sketchy sort of plot. I mean,
she's the harbinger of.
And originally she's being protected by this Marshall Stratt, and he's he's quite effective as far as a protector goes. I believe when the film begins proper, we see him being chased by the lead baddie Fender Tremolo, and Fender Tremolo has this band of Mad Max-esque warriors.
Yeah, this whole thing is Mad Max.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like pirates. They keep being referred to as pirates.
Now,
Fender is hilarious in the sense that he's this gigantic, like 6'5",
Kiwi.
He's a New Zealand
Aboriginal warrior type guy.
And he's wearing this sort of chainmail armor, this chainmail tunic, really, which was originally built for Masters of the Universe. It was a character named Blade. But anyway, he's wearing this chainmail tunic, and he's got these sunglasses. They can only describe as Bret Hart-esque. They look like Bret Hart sunglasses. And when he removes his sunglasses, he's got these really bizarre sort of piercing blue eyes, very...
otherworldly, and he's got anger problems.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely got anger problems. I mean, this is the guy that said, "I like this world. I like the death. I like this." So,
I guess as they flash back as part of Van Damme's character's mm-hmm. flashback, his anger, he really let it out by inflicting Van Damme's family with, you know, a bunch of. Yeah, he basically tortured them.
Well, let's talk about this scene. Yeah. That was interesting because they keep Van Damme's character, Gibson, he keeps flashing back to scenes when in his, I guess, younger days. And at that point, I mean, this was
the flashback, he's sporting this ridiculous orange wig with a ponytail.
Yeah.
It looks like a Jimmy Fallon sketch.
It's
absolutely ridiculous. He's obviously like missing his wife. And son and daughter, I guess, from whom he's estranged,
mm-hmm.
and this gangster, and we find out later he's implicated in the death of a few of his family members,
which is quite cool. So basically, he makes them. It's a well, and
he lowers them into it.
Well, he doesn't lower them. They're in a well. And they're holding onto barbed wire. And he conscripts the daughter. To hold on to the barbed wire. If you can hold on, they survive.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah,
they die.
That's a vicious rite of passage.
Yeah, exactly. And she can't hold on, so there goes Mrs. Rickenbacker and Rickenbacker Jr. But for some reason,
fretboard Rickenbacker goes down and meets his demise.
But like Lazarus, rises up. There goes Van Damme, just crawls out of the well, and he's alive, seemingly unscathed. So he becomes this sort of like this lone wolf. I mean, he doesn't really seem to give a shit about anything at this point.
Yeah, nor, and I mean, you would be pretty jaded at this point too.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife and son have been murdered. You're left to subsist on, I don't know what, because it never shows them eating. Whatever you can find.
Well, at one point, this was kind of funny.
Shooting squirrels, I don't know.
This was strange too. Another thing, what did we learn? Like, he meets up with this... he meets up with the cyborg. We'll talk about that in a moment too. But there's this girl that he meets up with. Do you remember her name?
No,
I don't remember her name either.
But she's the usual eye candy from these types of movies.
And she's a bit of a hanger-on, and she's sort of following him around and saying like, "What do you care about? Do you care about this world? Come on, come on."
Yeah.
At one point, they're sitting there, and she's eating something out of a Tupperware container.
Yeah,
I'm like, so Tupperware survives the plague of the apocalypse? I don't know. It was interesting. Gladware.
Hey, if you can find Tupperware, you hang on to it. It's well made stuff.
And post plague, you got to make sure that your food stays fresh. So keep it in Tupperware. But that was interesting.
And he starts. I guess he sort of takes her under his wing.
Well, and he sort of follows him around, and he's not too happy.
Reluctantly.
Yeah.
But she demands that he, take her to Atlanta. To find this cure.
Atlanta.
And she's obviously very, very buxom and very attractive. And that she at one point tries to throw herself at him. And, she lowers her top and she's just got, these wonderful breastises. And he doesn't partake. I don't know. What do you ascribe this to? I guess maybe still he's a recent widower. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
So let's talk about the cyborg. Let's talk about the pathetic cyborg. This is Pearl the Cyborg. Mm-hmm. And, at one point, like I said, at the beginning of the movie, her protector, Marshall Stratt, is being chased by Fender. He does not make a good accounting of himself. I mean, he basically gets decapitated quite quickly.
Quite quickly, yeah.
And Van Damme just happens to be there, and he fights off... Mr. Tremolo, and then all of a sudden she says I'm a cyborg. She takes off like the back of her head, and it's kind of cool. Like it's
sort of
RoboCop-esque, mechanical, whatever. And there's also this other scene where they show a flashback to her, and her, like eyeball pops out mechanically, and that was cool.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's very few cyborgian elements.
No,
you know,
it is true
because she ends up being, I believe, was she kidnapped by the Fender gang? Or
yes, she was. She was kidnapped by them, and for reasons unexplained. And I guess why would they kidnap her? Because they're not. Oh, I guess they want to prevent her from getting the cure,
which
is kind of ridiculous.
Well, because Fender likes this world. He does not want. He doesn't want a cure.
Well, surely, like for the duration of or the rest of his lifetime, he would be able to reap the benefits of this post-apocalyptic wasteland. Even if everyone was cured, what are they going to rebuild civilization?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing left except the burning remnants of New York City.
To reference Battlefield Earth again, I think.
He wanted leverage.
He wanted leverage.
By having Curl, you know, whose brain had all the secrets of the cure for the plague, mm-hmm. he had leverage. So, yeah, I think that's about it.
So you're left with this chase. It's not unlike Warriors, where they're going from New York. Instead of going from New York to Manhattan to Brooklyn, they are trying to get their way to... from New York to Atlanta.
Right, and we should say, I mean, you say it's on foot.
It's on foot, which would take, so this is obviously not in real time.
Well, let me think about it.
To walk to Atlanta would take about at least 3 months.
It's a 5-day drive, to get from New York to Atlanta. Because I remember.
But they make impressive traffic along like a dirt road.
Yeah, they seem to get there within, a day and a half. But anyhow.
We should also say, like, for a post-apocalyptic wasteland, Fender has at one point managed to score a ferry or some sort of barge as a means of travel.
Well, by nefarious means, I think you have to burn down a village in order to get
So he snags this boat, which is great, but who in this post-apocalyptic wasteland is processing and refining hydrocarbons? Is like, how is this boat being powered? There's no marina, there's no gas station,
there's no galley with slaves and oars,
Yeah. So maybe it's possible that he's squirreled away the last remaining remnants of gasoline.
Hidden somewhere in his camel tunic?
Yeah. I don't know. So what we're left with is, again, there's a sort of a race to get to Atlanta and to intercept people who are trying to get to Atlanta and to try to prevent the wannabe survivors from getting access to this, I guess, vaccine or what have you from the CDC.
Now, this movie, I mean, it's a very interesting movie in the sense, like, the look and the feel of it. It's very, I would say,
like a dreamscape.
It's hallucinatory. Yeah. And, very slow, a lot of the action scenes are slowed down. It's got a very sort of hypnotic score. Mm-hmm. The fight scenes are in slow-mo. We'll talk about some of the ineffectual kicks in a moment or two. But, it's got a really, really weird feel to it. And, everyone seems very much half asleep.
Yeah, pretty much.
Van Damme, he's always half asleep in all the movies. But, I mean, everybody else seems half asleep, too. There's an incredible scene where, I guess we should talk about the famous splits. Of course, Van Damme has to...
I guess he's being tailed by Fender and his henchmen.
Yep. And this henchman,
one guy's chasing him with a knife. And Van Damme, it seems like he's almost contractually obligated to do splits. Yep. He's in an alley, and he's... doing the splits above this henchman.
This is famed bodybuilder, Mr. Universe, German Ralph Moeller, who ended up he played Conan the Barbarian on TV and some other muscle bound meat roles. But in this one, he doesn't have any lines of dialogue.
No.
He's got this ridiculous looking Dee Snider wig. Yeah. And Van Damme's got doing the splits above
splits across an alley,
and then he.
Yeah, he's brandishing a knife, and Van Damme actually recently spoofed this in an ad, but I think he's done this in at least 3 or 4 movies where he's showcasing his incredible ability to do the splits from obviously his kickboxing training in Belgium.
And he's above the guy and he stabs him in the head. And this is a very stabby movie. There's a lot of knife work, a lot of stabs. A lot of stabbing, a lot of slicing, and a lot of screaming. Mm-hmm. But one of the most incredible scenes is when Van Damme is crucified.
Yeah, finally the gangsters catch up to him. And they beat the living shit out of him. And we should say, preface this by saying, I've never seen someone get so badly abused in any one film. This is just to name a few. This gang crucifies him. Prior to that, he was headbutted, slashed, kicked, punched, and then toward the end, he had a car door repeatedly rammed off his noggin. So this guy has been through, he's been through the ringer.
Oh,
but
this is
the first, and this is probably the worst, beating he sustains. And in injuries he sustains, he's crucified and left...
20 feet above, left to rot
on a ship's mast,
right?
Because there's some ship. I guess this is a post-apocalyptic world, and maybe global warming hit, and the ship has been grounded. What's the word for it? Left I don't know what the word is, but this ship. Yeah, the ship has been stranded, yeah. And so they just leave him there, mm-hmm. and he is crucified. Mm-hmm. So he's got stakes driven through his wrists.
Yeah.
But don't let that stop you. Yeah. It's minor encumbrance.
Exactly. Yeah.
He flashes back to the love of his good woman.
Yeah.
His pixie-haired wife, yeah. And to his daughter.
She's pretty cute, by the way, his wife.
But, yeah, she is pretty cute. Yeah. And who should, speaking of his daughter, we learn that his daughter runs with this gang, and which is really ridiculous. Yeah, that's one of them.
Yeah, we learn that because the necklace that she's wearing and whatever.
Yeah, and she gets all teary-eyed, obviously seeing her papa getting strung up on the mast.
Yep.
So she's sort of almost weeping in front of him. Meanwhile, she's reprimanded by her leader, Fender. Like, what are you doing? Why are you getting so emotional? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Drags her away. But, this will not faze him. And he manages to... This is a pretty... I guess this
ridiculous.
Is... Ridiculous. Yeah. Where he gets himself down from the mast by kicking it.
Yeah, he managed to extricate himself from the cross, from the crucifixion, because, as he's walking back, he gets more and more angry. And he's, like, kicking and flailing and thrashing. And he's mm-hmm. kicking the mast. And as he's doing so, he's breaking at the structure and we gotta say he's 20 feet up in the air, right?
Yeah.
He's crucified, he's got arrows through his wrists,
and yeah.
Finally he manages to kick the to break the mast, and he falls 20 feet down and he rips himself off the crucifix, and he seems very unscathed. He just gets up and goes about his merry way.
Well, luckily his paramour there is still alive. Mm-hmm. And she's able to cut him loose, and because she, as you said, she's a hanger-on, she's like a groupie.
Yep.
And she removes him from the cross.
Yeah.
Then they continue onward.
But yeah, as you mentioned, Van Damme. He takes a lot of Van Damme-ish in this. Movie, so they continue onward, and it's kind of funny because when they were in New York, when they were in Hoboken, we saw extras. There were people in this movie, but by the time they get close to Atlanta, there's nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
And at this point, it's just one fight scene after another. And Chris, have you ever been kicked in the head by like a drop kick or a roundhouse or something?
Not recently. I've been punched in the head.
We all have. But I think a kick to the head would do it. There's so many.
And a kick to the head. Ordinarily would do it even from an amateur who would kick you solidly. If they get one clean shot, I think you're down for the count. This is a trained Muay Thai kickboxing competitor, Jean-Claude. Mm-hmm. The muscles from Brussels. He doles out numerous kicks from close range, like no defense.
Yep.
And these people are able to withstand 4, 5, 6, 7, and they just keep coming.
Yeah, they keep coming. Of course, which leads to the climactic fight between Fender and Gibson. That's almost like, which guitar do you prefer? But anyway, we won't get to spoiler territory. But
there's, as you said, there's some sad, real life. There was real life tragedy associated with this film. Mm-hmm. We should say the actor who played Fender,
mm-hmm.
he took Jean-Claude to court over an injury that he sustained. I guess there was...
Was that like an errant kick or something? Or?
No, it was a... I don't know what the term is in film, but I guess it was sort of a... It was a like a dummy knife that they used in one of the action scenes.
Okay.
And he accidentally... Jean-Claude accidentally... took out his eye.
Wow.
And so he the actor who played portrayed Fender was awarded $500,000 in damages.
Hmm.
And I don't know why he went after, actually maybe I do know why. He probably went after the muscles from Brussels because, as you said, Cannon was insolvent.
Yeah,
so maybe there's no one else to go after. But
exactly.
So this movie has an air of sadness surrounding mm-hmm. it. So this poor bastard lost his eye, and his performance was pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, incredible / ridiculous. There's lots of monosyllabic grunting, and Fender just says it's the expert going, refrain,
his catchphrase.
How many times he go, arr!
Yeah, anyway. And his henchmen as well, as they chase Van Damme and his young paramour there through the sewers, mm-hmm. through the you know, through the brush, through, you know, across barren roads. So,
he definitely had an imposing physical presence, and I think that Fender could have probably had a sustained career. The actor played Fender, we don't know his name, but he could have had a sustained career in action films, but, good old Jean-Claude decides to pluck out one of his eyes,
there goes
Fender, you know?
So I guess we already talked about what we learned. So what would we rate this?
Well, before we talk about that, it's so sad for me. I mean, to rate this movie, because like I said before, this is the final canon feature. And this, I mean, I will, without spoiling anything, I will say the very last line of the movie.
Strange. He's the real cure for this world.
Yes, and this is the side of it. It's like, it's strange, but I feel he's the real cure for this world.
Yeah, Van Damme is the messiah.
What is he?
Really, right?
Well, like, I guess so. Yeah. Yes. But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, I mean, this is the company that brought us, like, you know, Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo, Death Wish 3, like Ninja 3, like on and on and on. And it goes out in this fucking ridiculous line. So sad to me. So, I mean, between Fender losing his eye and this, you know, this basically, like, Shredding the Door and Cannon features, I'm too grief stricken to give it a rating. I just can't do it, man. I'm just too sad, man.
This is depending on your affinity for post-apocalyptic wasteland Mad Max ripoffs, and as luck would have it, I have an incredible affinity for both.
As do I. And actually, my grief is starting to subside. So I will give a star.
I think a 3 for sure, yeah. And. The cyborg in question, she delivers a pretty bad performance that can't be excused by the fact that she's mostly robotic. She's pretty fucking bad. Jean-Claude has his charms, muscles from Brussels. I've been to Brussels. It's kind of a fun place. Its reputation is a dull sort of bureaucratic Eurozone sort of center of you know, government. You know, public sector, you know, it has that typical vibe to it, but it's a fun place. They've got incredible steak frites, they've got delicious beer.
Mussels.
They've got their most famous export is...
Not the mussels from Brussels.
The mussels from Brussels and maybe Hieronymus Bosch. Yeah. So there you go, famous Belgians.
Yeah. And you're in Bruges as well, right?
I was in Bruges as well, which is that excellent movie.
That was a great movie. I saw that movie. It looked incredible. Mm-hmm. The
architecture. So I'll give it... What's weird, we were talking about this earlier... we don't remember, because we both saw this as kids, we don't remember this being as surreal, dark, dreamlike as it was. So it has, like, it had higher aspirations than your typical, you know, post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Or everyone Van Damme, just like, you know, kickboxer or Double Impact or whatever. There's something, there was something very, it's hard to define, but there was some quality about this movie that just really... lent itself to like this real sort of surreal, almost as we said before, hallucinatory, dreamlike atmosphere.
So 3.5 for me.
Yeah,
for
I
sure.
Give it 3.5 too. I mean, as I said before, I mean, I wish that Canon was still producing films today. You know, there is a documentary which I've yet to see, but it's going to be making its way, I think, to home video soon. It's called. Electric Boogaloo, The Rise and Fall of Canon Pictures. I can't wait to see it.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And, so it will detail, you know, like, but I mean, yeah, I mean, this was it. This was the end. So, as, you know, Jim Warren would say, this is the end.
My only friend, the end. Yeah. And this is the end of our podcast as well.
Yeah.
For more, check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com. Reviews Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Also, terrific movie giveaways.
Yeah, and I will say, even though this was the last Canon film, this is not the last Canon film we'll review or talk about. There's so much in the book that we will visit in future reviews/podcast. So yeah, check out the site, and
we'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.